starting now, and we'll give that a few seconds before I turn it over to our chair to get started.
Great.
It is recording now.
Thank you very much. This is Suzanne Lester, Public Finance Director for the County of Orange. Today is Thursday, May 13th, and we're convening the Public Financing Advisory Committee. At this point, I will turn it over to the chair of the committee, Min Chai.
Great. Thank you, Suzanne, and good afternoon, everybody. We'll call this meeting to order. This is Min Chai, and today, again, is May 13th, 2021, and it is now 1:32 p.m. Hope everyone's staying healthy as things are slowly going back to normal. At this time, I'd like to ask Christine, our clerk, to please take roll so we could get the meeting started. And please reply here for the record when you hear your name, since some of us, including myself, are appearing telephonically.
Min Chai?
Here.
Tom Hammond?
Here, telephonically.
John Moore?
Present.
Carlos Carney?
Here, by telephone.
Wallace Rodecker?
Here, telepathically.
Sherry Friedenrich?
Present by a phone call.
Okay. Frank Davies?
Here.
And Michelle Geary?
Here.
Okay. All present.
Okay. And okay, thank you. As we go ahead.
Oh, Min, this is Suzanne Lester. Just before we proceed with the agenda, I just wanted to give a reminder to everyone, especially our consultants that are on the line. We have a number of consultants. If you need to step away or you have any background noise, we'd appreciate if you stayed on mute unless you're called upon with a question to join the meeting. And also, because we had this experience at the last meeting, please do not put us on hold, because at the last meeting we were disrupted by hold music and we couldn't reach whoever the person was to turn it off. And so I just want to place that reminder out there. And with that, I'll pass it back to the chair, Min Chai.
Great, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for those reminders. I do remember that. So hopefully everybody will be mindful and follow accordingly.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
It's John Moore. I don't think I indicated I'm attending telephonically.
Okay, great. Can we get that on record, please? So just one more reminder is to state your name, before you speak, so we know who's speaking for the record and so we don't all speak at once. Okay, with that, I'm gonna go ahead and turn over to the agenda. We have three items and we'll get, started right away. The first one being the approval of minutes for our last meeting on December 3rd. Wow, that's almost 5 months ago. Do we have any comments from the committee?
Tom Hammond here. I do. It's my usual complaint about minutes. They're quite incomplete as usual. And I think what irritates me the most is that Suzanne Lester explained the process, but she didn't, the minutes don't say what she explained. John Moore asked about the John Wayne Airport. Suzanne Lester explained, but she didn't explain what. And I know that you've got an audio recording of this down below. And if the supervisors or their staff are interested at all in these minutes, they'd have to listen to a 2.5 hour audio to get the details. I just think that these minutes are totally incomplete. And I know you have a policy, the county has a policy about it, but I still complain about it.
Okay.
Thank you. This is Suzanne Lester. Your complaint is noted, Mr. Hammond. We appreciate the feedback and we have, passed that on to the clerk.
So, Tom, going back to your concern that you raised, is it the absence of the explanation that Suzanne provides in response to the comments and questions that are presented by the committee members that you feel is lacking? Or how do you propose that we could make it a little bit more comprehensive and complete without over-exasperating the minutes?
Well, simply by explaining what the question is. In other words, when Ms. Lester is asked a question, all the minutes say is, yeah, she responded, but nobody knows what she responded with. I mean, what kind of minutes are those? I just have one more nit that I think definitely should be on the second page. There's a line there that says, Vice Chairman asked about arbitrage. Mr. Dafferty explained that county is, I think that should be negotiating, not contracting with OSERS. But that's a non sequitur. What's that got to do with the question? I asked about arbitrage and he said they're negotiating with OSERS. I mean, I don't know what that means.
Right. So, Suzanne, do you have any response to how we can address the questions presented in the minutes? I know that this is a two-pager. I don't know if there's a page limit or just a word count limit, but this has been raised a number of times, and I kind of want to get this resolved so that we don't revisit this issue every single time.
This is Suzanne Lester. The Public Finance Committee minutes are drafted in accordance with the county policy set by the clerk of the board and are consistent. Actually, they're more detailed than the Board of Supervisor meeting minutes. And so we're following a format that's in the county policy. And so we have put the link so anyone interested in the question or response can do one of two things. They can either go listen, click on the link to listen to the audio recording, or they can call our office or me directly to inquire further.
Right. I mean, I think we all understand that. I think, if there's a win-win kind of recommendation to the concern that Mr. Hammond's raising, I think that would be really great. And I don't know, this link it takes you to the entirety of the recording.
Yeah.
If there's a
Madam
way.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
Madam Chairman, it's John Moore. I think I may have a suggestion for that. I think who's ever preparing these minutes should listen to the recording. And for example, when I asked about the John Wayne Airport, they should reference at 5 minutes and 72 seconds or 52 seconds in, you can go to that, because somebody, as long as they don't want to give us the detail, let them put the reference of when that question was asked.
This is Suzanne Lester. I think that's a good suggestion, and I'm looking back at our clerk that prepares the minutes, and I'm getting a nod, so I believe we can accommodate that.
Great. Yeah, even if it's not to the specific question, perhaps we could break down the link, the recording, to each agenda item so that it's not the entire 1 hour, 2 hour session, if that's more doable or feasible.
We'll explore that. Yeah, we'll
Tom Hammond here. Far be it from me to argue with the clerk of Orange County about the 4 minutes, but I mean, it just occurs to me it's a bad policy, and these aren't minutes. They're cryptic, and the purpose of the minutes, as I see it, the purpose of PFAC is to advise and to help the supervisors and their staff to understand these issues. And they're requiring them to go to an audio of 2.5 hours, even though it's earmarked where it is in the audio. I mean, it seems to me counterproductive. So that's just my view. But I can't change the policy of the clerk. The clerk has handed down, but I'm just commenting. And if nothing else, I would appreciate amending the minutes about that one paragraph I mentioned. But I asked a question about arbitrage, and I got an answer about contracting with OSERS on the discounted rate. That's not what we said.
And this is Suzanne Lester. We'll revisit those minutes and the audio recording to clarify that and amend them.
Great, thank you. So with those comments, Dolly noted, do we have a motion to approve the minutes for the last meeting?
This is Carlos Carney, so moved.
I have a motion from Carlos Carney and seconded by John Moore.
Wallace
Roediger, thank you. So we'll take a vote to approve.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you.
Minchai?
Aye.
Tom Hammond?
As amended.
John Moore?
Aye.
Carlos Carney?
Aye.
And Wallace Roediger?
Aye.
Thank you.
All right, so they're unanimously approved. The next item is the election of the PFAC 2021-22 chair and vice chair. According to the PFAC bylaws, the nomination for chair and vice chair for the next fiscal year should technically be the next sequential members representing the third and fourth districts, which would be Mr. Carlos Carney and Mr. Wallace Roediger. What would be the committee's pleasure on this?
This is John Moore. I have a question, Mim. How long were you in office?
I think for this would be my third meeting, except we had canceled the prior one in March. So this would be my last meeting. So I think I covered
How many of you actually chaired?
This would be my third.
Okay. And we're scheduled for four?
The fourth one is in September.
Right, but I'm saying that we're, our calendar, we've limited it now down to four, haven't we?
Yes, it would be every quarter. But we skipped the last quarter, remember, in March, because we didn't have,
right.
Yeah.
Which is not unusual for us.
Right.
Right.
So do we have a nomination? Do we have any comments on who would want to serve, or do we just go by the sequential number?
John Hammond helped spearhead the language that we're operating on, and I'm fine with it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, then Carlos Carney for third district. And Wallace Roediger for the fourth district would be the chair and vice chair, respectively. Do you guys accept the nomination?
How long? I have a question on Carlos. How long have you been on the committee, Carlos?
I'm not sure. Has it been a year and a half?
Yeah. There were some questions. I thought there was that you had to have a certain amount of time in.
I think it was 1 year. Yes.
Yeah.
This is Suzanne. If I might interrupt for a moment, this is Suzanne Lester. Carlos Carney was appointed in September of 2019.
Okay, thank you. And the vice chair is?
This is Tom Hammond. I think that's fine, Carlos. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to rely on staff, and it's going to be difficult to achieve what Chair Chai has over her term. She set incredibly high standards, so if the rest of you can accept it, it's going to be a little bit of a step down. I'll give it my best.
No, I don't think so.
You'll be fine.
We have all the confidence in the world in you, Carlos.
Yeah.
I think that's a good outcome because it puts us on sequence of going through the districts as chairman, so I think that would be a good recommendation. So,
yeah. Okay, then can we have a nomination, or do we just move as?
I'll motion.
Okay.
Wallace Roediger.
Okay, and second.
John Moore. I'll second. I missed our vice chair. Could you tell me that again?
Vice chair would be Wallace. Yeah, Wallace Redeker.
It was Wallace, okay.
Yeah.
Great. Good. I made the second.
Second by John Moore. Okay, and then should we take a vote now, Christine?
Sure. Min Chai?
I'll approve for both.
Tom Hammond?
Approved for both.
John Moore?
Approved for both.
Carlos Carney?
Approved for both.
And Wallace Redeker?
Decision's decision. Should I vote against myself? No, approved.
All right. So with that, congratulations to our new chair and vice chair. And that leads us to our last agenda item, which is to recommend to the Board of Supervisors the selection of Wells Fargo Bank National Association and the issuance of the Series B notes to finance the Teeter Plan. We have a number of staff and consultants available to answer questions on this item, as Suzanne Lester had mentioned, including Suzanne Lester, Public Finance Director, Louis McClure, Public Finance Manager, the Bond Disclosure Consultant, Andrea Greenwald of ORIC, Municipal Advisor Consultant, David Broadsley of KNN Public Finance, and Wells Fargo Representatives, Julia Kim and Lynn Love. And I believe, Suzanne Lester, you have a presentation for us on this item.
Good afternoon. This is Suzanne Lester. And just before I get started with the presentation, I just wanted to clarify that now that Carlos Carney has been elected the chair, he is effective immediately the chair. So just want to notify the committee of that. And Wallace Redeker is now the vice chair.
Oh, so even during the midst of the meeting?
Yes.
That's correct. And you know, at the first meeting of each year of the Board of Supervisors, you'll see the meeting begin with one chair, and then when they elect the next chair for that next year, they'll actually get up from their seat and move seats right then and there.
then with that, I'd like to thank everybody for the opportunity for allowing me to serve as chair and all the support from staff and the committee members. Thank you, and over to Carlos then.
Before we go to Carlos, this is John Moore. Mim, I want to thank you for your leadership and taking over. You've done an excellent job, and I'm proud to serve on the board with you as our chair.
Thank you so much, John.
And on behalf of the 4th District, Min, I feel the same way. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. Likewise.
Indeed. Third District, on behalf of the 3rd District, Min, you've been fabulous, and it's been great working with you, and I look forward to your support in the coming year.
Of course. Pleasure is all mine.
And Min Chai, this is Sherry Friedenrich, the ex officio. You've done a great job, and I know you've steered the committee well during this past time you've been chair, and I look forward to continuing to work with you.
Likewise. Couldn't have done it without you, Sherry.
Okay. This is Suzanne Lester. With that, I'll give the presentation for agenda item number 4.
Great.
Today we're requesting your committee's recommendation on the selection of Wells Fargo to provide the financing for the county's Teeter plan and recommend the issuance of Series B notes. The issuance of the Series B notes is a continuation of the current note structure in place, which is a drawdown direct purchase note program. Since 2013, the county has funded the Teeter program through the note program. It's worked very well for the county, providing flexibility in the county's ability to issue notes in the amount necessary to purchase the tax delinquencies from the participating Teeter entities each year. There's a table on page 2 of the staff report that summarizes the history of the note program since 2013. The current outstanding note balance is $52,630,000. The current note expires July 30th, 2021.
Excuse me, Suzanne, so we're all on the same page. Can you please restate the page that you're reading from?
I was just referencing, I'm not reading the staff report, but I was referring to the table on the staff report on page two.
Mm-hmm. On page two of agenda item number four?
Yes.
Pages, okay, got it. Thank you.
Suzanne, on this one, it shows note authorization amount of $86 million, the July Teeter delinquency purchase of $50 million, July 30th outstanding balance $83 million, and then the note repayment of $30 million. Are you saying that the $85,386,000 as of this date is now $52 million? I don't remember the number you gave out.
And that's correct. So looking at that bottom line of or bottom row of the table,
right,
for 2021 on July 30th, after we made the delinquency purchase, the note outstanding was $85,386,000. Since then, we have made one repayment of $32,756,000 to come to a current outstanding balance of the note of $52,630,000.
Thank you. That answered my question.
Turning to the recommended selection of Wells Fargo, on March 1st, 2021, CEO Public Finance Department issued a request for proposal for a financing mechanism for the county's Teeter plan. The RFP was distributed to all 12 firms on the county's current qualified panel of underwriter list. We received back three responses to the RFP from Citigroup, JP Morgan, and Wells Fargo. An evaluation panel was convened, made up of two public finance managers, a manager from the county budget office, a manager from the treasurer tax collector department, and a public appointee PFAC member. The panel unanimously recommended the selection of Wells Fargo. And I think attachment A is the RFP evaluation sheet. The Wells Fargo proposal offers a continuation of the three-year note program. The taxable interest rate on the note would be 1 month LIBOR plus 34 basis points. And this is an improvement, actually, from the 2018 pricing that we received from Wells Fargo, an improvement from 50 basis points to 34 basis points in the current proposal. That would be a savings of $160,000 based on a $100 million note utilization.
Isn't that because our bond was increased in rating?
2018, that was probably, close to the time that we upgraded our rating by Fitch to AAA.
Yeah. Right. And one other point on this, how is it that JP Morgan and the Citicorp are so far off the mark? When you come up to the weighted score of Wells Fargo at 96, 71 for JP Morgan and 74, I mean, it's seems like that's a huge spread for those size banks. I mean, you would think they would be closer.
This is Suzanne Luster. I'll just speak, personally on the JP Morgan proposal. We actually, back in 2018, it was much closer. We received a much better proposal from them back in 2018. This proposal that we received, it was more expensive. And it wasn't prepared by local folks who we've worked it with in the past. The contacts were from New York, and it was obvious. It was obvious to me that the folks writing the proposal had no experience with the county and did not know us. Their proposal looked very generic and boilerplate.
Suzanne, Suzanne, is it my understanding that you're not allowed to, or the policy is that you don't go back to the bidders and say, you know, is that the best you can do? You seem to be far off the mark.
You know, we don't do that if we have a good winning bid. And we had a 5-member evaluation committee who unanimously recommended.
And who was representative?
This is Carlos. I'm sorry, what was, who please state your name when you raise the question.
Carlos, it's John Moore. Who was our representative to be back on the committee?
Dan, you had that?
This is Suzanne Lester. It was Tom Hammond.
Okay. So I think if you haven't already, if you look at Attachment A, and that's the grading schedule for the from each of the panelists and for the three candidates, and my take in terms of showing where Wells Fargo pulled away is the first two categories, the quality of the proposed structure and the experience of the respondent. Between those two categories, they scored 39 compared to, for one, it was 27 and the other was 32. And that pretty much gets reflected at the bottom line. So that just helps give an idea of where the gradings were applied. So are there any other questions with respect to the gradings of the candidates, the three candidates?
Well, this is Tom Hammond. I'll add to this. I was of course on the committee, and the Morgan case was, they weren't as good on pricing. Wells Fargo's done a good job with this, and if you look at the documentation for going forward to next year is already done. This is a simple 5-page amendment to the existing agreement with Wells Fargo. The mechanics and the operations, I think Suzanne has persuaded me, is that it's worked very well for 3 years. Wells Fargo is very competitive. The Citibank proposal was really off the mark. They proposed a brand new structure, which required a rating. It required God knows what kind of documentation. It probably needs a registration, right, Suzanne? I don't know. But the Wells Fargo thing proposed a whole new financing scheme. So I think that the Wells Fargo proposal, it was competitively priced. They've worked well for the past 3 years. The documentation is easy. I think Suzanne's staff would feel relieved at doing another year with Wells as opposed to taking on another investment banker. And so that's my input on how we analyze that.
That answers my question. Thanks, Tom.
Okay.
Okay.
Suzanne, I think we took you off track a little bit right about when you were going to talk about perhaps the index for calculating interest. Is that?
Yep, I'm almost there. This is Suzanne.
Oh, okay.
I just wanted to continue that the Wells Fargo proposal also provides the added option of setting a fixed rate at the time of issuance in July 2021. And continuing with the anticipated cessation of the LIBOR index, the attached documents contain a methodology for transitioning to a subsequent index. However, the subsequent index is not yet established, and the definite timing is not yet established. All three bank proposals that we received included the continued use of LIBOR as the index and included LIBOR benchmark replacement language. So the bottom line is, all the banks are still using LIBOR. Eventually, there'll be a conversion to another established index, but that has not been determined at this time. So with that, we request your recommendation to the Board of Supervisors to consider the continuation of the TEETER financing program with Wells Fargo that provides an efficient mechanism to finance a significant county general fund revenue source. And that concludes my formal presentation.
Okay, thank you for that, Suzanne. Are there any other questions, any other comments before we open the floor for a motion?
Suzanne, I have Tom Hammond. I have a question on page 3, that table on the bottom there, which shows the spread between the revenue and the expenses on that. And in 2017, I guess that drop in net revenue was a result of going, I guess they killed the tax-free years versus, what did you call it? There's a change by the Treasury about tax-exempt. Yeah. Is that the reason for that sudden drop in revenue?
This is Suzanne Lester. That's correct. It was during that year that the county paid off its bankruptcy debt. We were no longer eligible for tax-exempt financing. At that time, in order to remain tax-exempt, the county had been placing a yield-restricted investment with the treasurer that would be invested in slugs. And then the slugs window closed. So that left us out of compliance. And so another example of Wells Fargo working quickly with the county as soon as we learned we were out of compliance to get back into compliance by switching to a taxable mode.
Okay, that explains it. Thank you. That's what I thought.
This is Min Chai. Suzanne, just kind of following up on that comment, in that paragraph above the table, it does say that Wells Fargo includes the option of issuing tax-exempt notes. So even though we're not a tax-exempt entity to take advantage of slugs, it seems like there is still an option available for a tax-exempt note. Is that correct?
This is Suzanne Lester. That's correct, and that optionality is in the legal documents provided we are eligible for tax exempt. Right. So if we became eligible, we could go that route, and then we wouldn't have to amend all the legal documents.
So why aren't we doing that?
Not eligible.
We're not eligible.
Oh, we're no longer eligible. I see. Okay.
That's correct.
I see.
Once again, Suzanne, why aren't we eligible?
Right.
It's basically, and if our bond counsel is on the line, if I go astray, if somebody, our bond counsel or municipal advisor would step in and correct me, but basically this turns into a cash flow financing where the county has to demonstrate a deficit. We go through a pretty extensive process, and it's also why the county is not eligible at this point for a tax and revenue anticipation note, which is a tax, a cash flow financing. Our cash flows are such that we're not able to demonstrate a deficit at any point in the year.
Which is a good thing.
Agreed.
Is our bond counsel on the line?
Yes, and this is Andrea. Suzanne, you did an excellent job explaining that.
Okay. Any other questions, any other comments?
I do, Mr. Chair. I have two questions under the purchase and reimbursement agreement, and since we do have legal counsel on call, I just wanted to direct their attention to Section 7.01, which basically addresses and outlines the events of default under the purchase and reimbursement agreement. And under the subsection I, it deems as an event of default where the provision of the agreement relating to the payment or the enforceability of the obligations to pay the note is to be deemed null and void, invalid, or unenforceable as a result of any legislative action, then it would constitute an event of default. But this would kind of be beyond the control of the county, I would think. And so to call that an event of default, which would then call for an acceleration of the payment of the outstanding payments due, would seem a little bit unfair. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that. Because I know that there's a 7-day grace period after the occurrence of the event of default, but even that 7-day wouldn't be enough or sufficient time period to cure.
Sure.
If, right? So I just wanted to see why that would be included as an event of default if, let's say, legislative decision came down to deem one of the provisions to be invalid or, you know, null and void.
This is John Moore. Could you tell us the page you're reading from so we can follow along?
Sure. This is in the second amended and restated note purchase and reimbursement agreement. And the section number is 7.01 on page 34 of that document. It's the attachment D.
Thank you.
So that's my first question.
This is Suzanne Lester. I was just going to ask if there was someone from Wells Fargo on the line that might like to address this question.
Sure, and I'm happy to. This is Andrea Greenwald from ORIC. I'm bond counsel. I'm happy to let Wells Fargo jump in because I think that would be helpful. I just want to point out in section 7.01 where it lists the events of default. There is an option in the very first sort of sentence of 7.01 to receive waiver by the purchaser. So it says unless waived in writing by the purchaser. So I just want to make sure that your reading of these is framed by that. Of course, there's still events of default, but there is the ability for waiver.
And this is David Field from Chapman & Keller. I represent Wells Fargo. And when you were asking the question, I was trying to get the document open. Which specific default do you have a question on?
It's subsection I under that section 7.01.
Okay. And the question is, why isn't it an event of default if the security-related provisions or the provisions related to the payment of principal or interest on the loans become invalid or contested?
Due to the legislative changes.
I mean, I don't know how to – I'm not sure I know how to answer the question in a way that it will satisfy you. But, from a bank's perspective, if, you know, something happens that materially changes – the nature of its credit, I mean, it needs to be in a position where it can exercise remedies.
Right, but it puts the county in an awkward situation and in a predicament where it can't really cure that, which is beyond their control. If it's something that is an act or an omission of the county, I could understand that putting them in that state of default and then requiring them to cure would make sense. But if there's a legislative change that deems that provision invalid and null and void, then, you know, I don't know. I can't answer for you in terms of how we would classify that. But to deem that as an event of default seems to be a little bit unreasonable.
And that's the best answer that I can give you. I mean, if the bank's security were to change because of a legislative action, it would need to be able to be in a position to be able to exit the facility.
Unless you waived it, which is in the opening paragraph of 7.01.
Right. That's right. I mean, what would most likely happen if something that, you know, that large of an event were to actually occur, I mean, you know, the county and Wells Fargo would be at the table having a discussion on how they were going to fix it.
Right. Okay. that's just kind of something that I always like to look at when there's kind of like this type of transaction. The second question is in regards to 9.12, and it's about the assignability of the notes. The county is not able to assign to a third party, which is understandable. But then the purchaser, in this case, Wells Fargo, is able to assign these notes without the county's consent. I feel like that's counterintuitive given the fact that we've gone through an RFP process to select Wells Fargo. So I guess my question is, in what circumstance would we expect Wells Fargo to assign these notes, and what possible risks do we face because of that?
So this is David again at Chapman. I mean, it's not assigning its obligation to fund, but to the extent that it does fund into the facility, it could sell down interest or portions of those, you know, of the loans and the notes. I don't know that there's any additional risk to the county because the bank's already funded its obligation.
Right.
From a practical perspective, and I don't know if there are folks on the phone from Wells Fargo or not, but the, you know, this is really, from a bank's perspective, the reason they have these provisions in here is they need to be able to manage their liquidity and balance sheet. I mean, to my knowledge, they never actually utilized these provisions.
Okay. So, I mean, if you were to assign, would you give us notice to the county that these are being assigned? Is there a provision in the document that says that we would receive notice that they are being assigned?
Yeah, so if you look at, so 9.912B, these are internal transfers within the bank. So, to the bank, to the extent it were to sell down to an affiliate or, you know, somebody within the bank family, because that's how, you know, banks manage their portfolios and their balance sheets, I mean, you wouldn't receive notice of that. I don't know if it's a big deal that if that's something that you need in terms of notice, but at least in my experience, banks from time to time do, I'll call it an intercompany transfer, and it isn't always, it maybe happens behind the scenes. So that's why we try to create flexibility there so the bank's not violating the terms of the agreement by not providing the notice. In 9.12C, if you read it down at the bottom of the paragraph, these are to third parties that are qualified institutional buyers under the securities laws, one, and two, also have to be commercial banks or another, so something that's called a QIB, as well as being a commercial bank with a minimum combined capital and surplus of $5 billion. These do require notice if you read, it's about seven or eight lines from the bottom.
Okay. So we just want to know who the actual, note holders are at the end of the day. Just from a compliance standpoint as well. So I think that's why I asked the question.
Okay, and thank you for asking. Thank you. Suzanne, is the wording of attachment D pretty much unchanged from prior year or prior years? Can you help us with some context there?
Yes, this is Suzanne Lester. Particularly, I believe those provisions are not amended from prior versions of this, especially from 2018.
Okay. And the matters that have been discussed, have they been issues in the past?
No, there has not.
Okay. So I appreciate the discussion and the questions that were raised. I'll ask the board if there's any thoughts as to whether anybody wants to make a motion for revision to the language as presented here. And there are good comments that were brought up. As I understand it, nobody from Wells Fargo is participating. Is that correct?
No, that's,
I guess not.
Hi, it's Lynn Love. I'm the relationship manager
for
the county from Wells Fargo.
Can you give us an idea? I think one of our members is just want to have some assurance that if certain things were to occur that we'd be notified and there'd be some dialogue. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. Yes. A couple things. I have been the county's relationship manager on the banking side since 2001, and we've been providing the TEETER program since 2013, and our team has had a very good communication strategy with Suzanne's team in terms of any changes in the market, at the county, or at the bank. And I would expect that we would continue to do so as we support this program.
Okay. So, Suzanne, are you comfortable that based on the dialogue that has been established in the past, that if any such concerns as are raised in the future, that between your staff and Wells Fargo, that the issues can be worked out and the appropriate communication can be made?
This is Suzanne Lester. Yes, I am.
Okay.
Carlos,
so let's go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No worries. Go ahead.
Just a reminder of what PFAC is supposed to do. We're supposed to recommend and advise the supervisors on these transactions, share any information that we have. If we had a capability of producing decent minutes to present these issues to the board, it would be helpful. I would just recommend that we insert in the minutes somehow, some way, these issues that Min has brought up and the responses that we got from the lawyers. Having said that, I will just add something to this. For those of you in the room who have had a career of borrowing money from banks, these agreements are all ugly. And they're in every agreement that of every major financing from a bank there is. And it finally gets down to having to have rely on good faith of your banker, which often works and sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. So I just wanted to make that point. And if we have these are valid issues that Min has brought up, there was a good response to it. It's the way it is. And if we think it's appropriate, we should advise the supervisors about it. And if they want to approve the financing, knowing this information, I think that's important.
I think that underscores Suzanne's comfort level in working with Wells Fargo. I have one question, but before I do, is there any other questions that any of the other board members had? Okay. So my question is this, and I guess it's more of a strategic or operational question, but going back to page 2 of the PFAC agenda item 4 handout, and it's the schedule that's at the top that we read from before. And it shows the outstanding balance had grown to $85 million. So my question to staff is that I think as a general rule, the consensus is that interest rates are probably going to go north from where they are now. And accepting that as the probability for the time being, is there an idea or a thought as to whether we would be best served or well served to reduce down that outstanding balance?
This is Suzanne Lester. There is a pledge to the notes. The pledge is the collection of the prior year base tax. So we don't have any option there. We collect those prior year base taxes, and those are used to pay down the note. That doesn't, and I was just going to add to that, it doesn't prevent the county from, paying further out of its discretionary general fund resources. But, I'd say particularly now during the pandemic, the county resources are precious.
Chair Carney, if I might, this is Michelle Aguirre.
Sure.
Thank you.
Just to expand on what Suzanne's comments, we do look at this regularly with our strategic financial plan. Suzanne and I look at the numbers. We look at our available resources, as Suzanne mentioned, our discretionary funding that's available, to see if that's something that we should strategically do compared to what the other demands are for those resources. So it's not something that is ignored. We do look at that on a regular basis. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, so I think
Carlos, this is John Moore. This is John Moore. From my reading and what I stay current on the rates, you know, they're talking 2023 before you're going to see really any material change. I mean, it's, you know, so I wouldn't, I don't think that's something we need to worry about at this point. I would like to put forth a motion to accept Wells Fargo as the teeter plan.
Okay.
And I'll second Mr. Minchai.
Okay, let me do this. Let me read the form it as the motion based on what's written in the agenda. So the recommendation to the Board of Supervisors, the selection of Wells Fargo Bank, National Association, and the issuance of the Series B notes to finance the teeter plan is the motion specifically. And John, you submitted the motion, is that correct?
That's correct.
That's okay, needed. And I believe Member Chai, you seconded?
Yes, I did.
Okay, the motion has been duly made and seconded. So do we call for the vote or do I ask for the vote?
Any questions? You have to ask questions.
Any question or discussion? We had discussion already. Okay, if not, then let's move forward with the official vote. So can we do a roll call vote, please?
Sure. Min Chai?
Aye.
Tom Hammond?
Aye.
John Moore?
Aye.
Carlos Carney?
Aye.
And Wallace Rodecker?
Aye.
Okay, thank you, everybody. The motion unanimously passes. Next on the agenda is, are there any public comments?
This is Suzanne Lester. We're convened in the county's planning commission room and looking around. There are no members of the public wishing to comment.
Got it. Any committee comments? Is this John?
I have a question for Suzanne. Yeah. How do we get out to the public that we're having telephonic meetings? Because obviously, you know, there's nobody there. Just as a matter of notice, do we tell them they can call in?
This is Suzanne Lester. That's why we're convened in the committee room, so that if a member of the public wishes to join the meeting, we've provided access.
That didn't answer my question. My question was, in the notice of the meeting, do we supply the phone number so if somebody from the public can sign in and participate?
No, we do not. You know, we are considering looking into either a Zoom or a Microsoft Teams format. If we were in the current format that we've got now, we don't have a mechanism to restrict comment or interruption at any time in the meeting. But you know, my understanding in the Zoom or a Microsoft Teams, you know, we can allow people in and out. You know, there's an administrator function.
Right. I'm just concerned about the public notice is all. I'm just trying to make sure that we're complying with our obligation.
I understand, and we are complying with our obligation, but, you know, we're exploring how to improve that.
Hopefully, based on what the president said today, that, you know, we can take the masks off, we can get back in meeting in person.
That sounds wonderful.
So I'll add as a committee comment, is there an anticipation of a certain time frame that we can convene there at a regular meeting.
CDC said today if you're fully vaccinated and it's been 2 weeks since your last shot, you don't need a mask indoors or out.
Okay.
Chair Carney?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. This is Michelle Aguirre when there's a moment to comment.
Okay. So my question was, I guess what I'd like to start with is there a plan for when we can have the meetings there at the county like we did before? Let's start it easy that way. And we can talk from there about, well, we can kind of, but, you know, there's these restrictions, whether it's mask or distance or whatever. But can you give us an idea, Michelle, in terms of what the most recent discussion is about? So we can discontinue, obviously, these remote meetings.
Right. So we are monitoring that because obviously we would like to be back in person.
Sure.
But what we're following is we've got Dr. Chow, public health officer, monitoring, and then we also have risk management that monitors Cal OSHA for us. And so there are, and we've got CDC. So there's lots of entities, right, that we need to be in compliance with. And so as we get new information, as soon as we have information that we have the ability to do that, then our plan is to go back in person. Right now, and Cal OSHA is supposed to be voting on their new regulations on May 20th. We still have a requirement to maintain the 6 feet social distance and the mask mm-hmm. wearing and all
Got
that.
It.
So, yeah, our plan is as soon as we are able to do that, then we will be doing that. We're just not able to do that yet. So, and
okay.
I know our next meeting, I believe, is scheduled for September. That would be nice, but we just have to follow the guidance.
Sure. Thank you for sharing that with us. Okay. Any other comments? If not, I'd like to, just before we adjourn here, I'd like to once again thank Min for serving as chair this past year, and also Tom for serving as vice chair. Thank you both very much. We really appreciate it. The county is throughout the county, we're blessed to have so many dedicated servants that especially on a volunteer basis come and do what you two do. Okay, the meeting is adjourned. Next meeting is September 9th, 2021. Okay, thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, and welcome aboard.